With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Who could end up in RB1 territory? Let's talk to the pros. Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P. Joe Pizzapia. With me today is Big Pod Energy, Andrew Erickson, and fantasy star himself, Pat Fitzmaurice. The Fantasy Fitz is here as well. And today we have a very special topic, an important topic to talk about with you. It's the identification of the next breakout RB1. Everybody's looking for the hero RBs, the zero RBs. We're looking for something else. We're looking for those guys who are ready to take the next step forward and become fantasy football gold in terms of the running back position. And Fitz, I'm glad to have you on the show. It's been a while. I've been stuck with Derrickson quite a bit. D-Bro is still, you know, licking his wounds after losing to Andrew in Fantasy Feud earlier this week. So he had to take some time off, sort of come to himself a little bit, get some time alone with his thoughts. So it's nice for you to step in here. But how important is it to you to identify these guys at the running back position who are ready to potentially make that jump from RB2s to RB1s, or really just come out of nowhere and become RB1s potentially?
Well, first of all, Joe, great to be back on with you. You know, I'm pinch hitting for Derrick Brown. Right now in Chicago, it's 95 with approximately 112% humidity. So how am I supposed to replicate that D-Bro energy under these types of weather conditions? But I'm gonna try to do my best, cape up, and see what I can do. So for me, it's very important because I'm often going with a zero RB or hero RB type of roster build. So I'm looking for those guys beyond the top 20 ADP, like who can maybe, you know, help me and start games for me early in the season.
Yeah, I'm more of the hero guy than the zero RB guy. I always feel like zero is just a cop out completely. But last year, Andrew, one of my favorite second running backs to draft was James Conner. And that worked out pretty well last year. So wherever I had Derrick Henry, wherever I had that big time RB1 guy, I waited, took my wide receivers, and then took shots on Connor late, figuring, hey, if it works out, great. If not, I'll look on the waiver wire for somebody else. But Connor's the perfect example of the kind of player we're looking for. A guy who's going to get more opportunities, a guy who potentially has scoring opportunities as well, who can really make an impact on fantasy football rosters.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head. You're looking at a player
that
like
wasn't
James
very big
Connor.
Pot energy that. Yeah. Hold on a second. I set you up like that. And Mr. Big Pot Energy gives me a yeah. I mean, really? That's all you got today, Erickson? I'm going to take that nickname away from you if you keep that up.
Oh, my God. Do not take that. I'm the victor of the family feud. So, no, I mean, when we look at the running backs, James Connor, and I think Leonard Fournette was also kind of like a guy viewed in a similar ilk where we had seen the production before. You know, it wasn't like, oh, James Conner is a fantasy RB1. Like, that's never happened. No, but that did happen before. Like, he did it in Pittsburgh. Leonard Fournette was an RB1 in Jacksonville. So there's also not even just trying to identify running backs that could be an RB1 for the first time, but some of these guys that maybe we're trying to write off a little bit too soon that maybe still have RB1 potential if they end up in the right circumstance, like Fournette did landing in Tampa Bay. And then James Conner landing in Arizona. So there are a couple other veterans that I'm also looking at too that maybe still have a little bit of RB1 juice left to squeeze.
All right, we're going to squeeze all the juice out of possibly can from the running back position. Before we do, we want you to squeeze everything you can out of your drafts, and the cheat sheet creator at fantasypros.com is the way to do it. If you go over to fantasypros.com/draftwizard, that's what you got to get the tool right there that allows you to combine all your favorite experts, which really means me, Fitz, Derek Brown, maybe Andrew Erickson if he brings enough energy. What you can do is either just have one expert, have all the experts you like, and create all their rankings into one cheat sheet. And every time the analyst updates their rankings, your cheat sheets get updated, and you can use that expert sync feature if you're a Fantasy Pros member, and you can have that automatic sync up to your draft every single time. It's like having us in the draft room with you, which is, I'm telling you, if you want somebody in the draft room with you, you want me, I'm the most fun, but all my colleagues are great as well. So make sure you check out the Draft Simulator and the Draft Assistant, both of which you can use that cheat sheet creator, and go start making your own cheat sheets right now. Cheating is okay here. No matter what anybody tells you, we absolutely endorse it here at Fantasy Pros. So use that cheat sheet creator. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard, where you can see all the magnificent draft tools we have for you this 2022 football season. Now, today's show in particular, we have two pieces that are on fantasypros.com right now. Very provocative, very thought-provoking. We have Running Backs Prime for Increased Touches, and that is by David Zach, who's got a fantastic article out there. And we also have Andrew Erickson's How to Identify Sleeper and Late Round Running Backs. So those two articles kind of inspired today's podcast. So if you want a deeper dive on some of those, go to Fantasy Pros and check out the work by David and Andrew. But here's a little fun thing. We're going to start with some of David's work. We'll save Andrew for the end because he's always here. Let's highlight one of our great writers here at Fantasy Pros instead. Since 2017, David's been able to predict which RBs are primed to outperform their ADP with a hit rate over 70%. So when somebody's hitting at that rate, we should all pay attention. So we saw significant vacated touches. That's what he's looking for. Significant vacated touches, things that you saw in Cincinnati, Denver, Detroit, LA all last year. He correctly identified Joe Mixon upticking, Melvin Gordon getting his opportunities, DeAndre Swift and Daryl Henderson, all of which outperform their ADP. And that's what we're trying to do today. We're trying to do that same thing. So we're exploring running backs that have 100 plus touches on a team that have now vacated, right? So they've already had 100 plus touches. Now, all of a sudden, there's 100 plus available touches there too. So this is the kind of player we're looking for. And the first one we're going to talk about is Saquon Barkley. So right now in the ECR, Saquon Barkley is RB14. This is a guy who a couple of years ago was challenging for the number one spot, Pat. And Barkley had 15.6 touches per game in 2021. They have 185 significant vacated touches for Saquon Barkley heading into this year. And basically, the only competition he's got, or the main one, is Matt Breida. So that shouldn't really stand out as competition. So let's talk about the first of the high priority guys, the high opportunity guys who might not have a lot of competition. Saquon's got all the talent in the world, but let's talk a little bit more about the risk versus the reward. Pat, when you're looking at Saquon and trying to evaluate him, how do you look at him in 2022 in terms of his value and the opportunity for him to be a true RB1 again?
Abundant touch opportunity with the Giants. Mm-hmm. A new offense with Brian Daboll that might be more exciting, more potent. I like the situation for sure. Is Saquon still physically the same guy we saw come out of Penn State a few years ago, that sort of unicorn back with the special athleticism, remarkable pass-catching ability? We hope he's the same guy, but at times last year we saw Devonta Booker, like, actually mistaken for Barkley because he would, like, burst through a hole and like, show this, nice giddy-up, and the announcers would say it was Saquon. Whoops, no, sorry, it wasn't. It was Booker. So we need to see Barkley, like, get back to being that guy. Fantasy football is just assessing, probabilities and what are the chances of that. You know, I was thinking that I was going to need a show me season from Saquon before I got in again. I think I got my first share in a best ball the other day. Like, I'm back to the point where I'm starting to warm a little to the possibility. And you know what, Joe? I mean, he's going into his contract season. Like, right, they have no reason to pull back the reins on Saquon this year. They're gonna get what they can out of him and maybe figure out in season if they want to give him a big extension offer or just walk away. So no reason to hold back on Saquon. Really going to be one of the fascinating guys, really one of the pivot guys in 2022 fantasy football.
Andrew, when we're looking at Saquon right now in terms of half PPR ADP, He is going as the 16th running back. Yeah, the ECR is at 14, so a little bit higher. But Saquon has shown you RB1 stuff before. He has shown you that ability. The workload's clearly there. Yet there's guys still going ahead of him, like, you know, DeAndre Swift, who's still kind of hovering around there. Aaron Jones, who had some injuries last year. David Montgomery. Like, those are kind of the players in that same range. But I think we could all agree, you know, Antonio Gibson, David Montgomery, the guys going ahead of him, don't really have a chance to finish as RB1 overall. There's still a small possibility that Saquon could reach that mark. With that being said, is there any reason to be potentially more aggressive on Saquon this year? Maybe take him a few spots ahead of some of these other guys because he's shown you before? Or is the risk of the injury really weighed him down significantly for you still?
No, I think that the injury, it's baked into his price now. Like, that's the thing. When we talk about all these running backs, because the position just is more injury prone than any other position in fantasy. So when you're looking at Barkley versus McCaffrey, oh, well, McCaffrey, like, there's no injury discount in most drafts. Like, you don't get one. Like, okay, I can pick him second overall instead of first. But Barkley, oh, I can get him in the third round, potentially, at the end of the second round. A guy that we were taking as a top five pick, basically didn't think about it at all at one point. Yeah, so the injury is obviously a concern, but right now he's not rehabbing. Like, it's interesting because when I first did my rankings, I almost kind of like assumed, like, okay, well, Barkley's like hurt already. Let me put him in like the outside the top 12. And then I kind of like realized, like, wait, he's not injured right now. Like, he's okay. it was, and then the situation around him, better offensive line, better offensive coaches put into place. And when you just think about the Giants as a whole, who is the most proven offensive player on their team? It's Saquon Barkley. Like, we like some of the upside with, like, a Tony, you know, maybe Kenny Galladay can capture some of his Detroit Lions form, but then there's no tight end, there's no backup running back, and, I mean, he might be the offense. Like, if it's going to be Daniel Jones sink or swim, like, he needs Saquon Barkley to ball out this year, and this team needs Saquon Barkley to ball out this year. So, for me, similar to what Pat was saying, like, I was kind of bearish on Barkley to kind of open my rankings, and I've just thought about it more, and I want him on my team, like, because he has that upside. He's shown that he can be an RB1. Like, look, David Montgomery maybe has a higher, you know, a safer median projection than Barkley, but I'm not playing fantasy football to finish in fifth place. Like, Barkley can swing the tides of your league. Like, he could be putting up CMC type numbers because of the way he's used as a receiver. So I'm definitely in on Barkley.
How come people seem to be okay after the last 2 years of Christian McCaffrey anointing him back at number two overall, but yet Saquon Barkley is at 14 or 16, Pat? Don't you think that seems a little curious? I mean, we've actually seen more Barkley the last 2 years than we've seen of McCaffrey. So yeah. How come it's okay to come back to the Christian McCaffrey, everything's going to be fine narrative, but we can't get there with Saquon Barkley? Why is that, Pat?
Because, I mean, Barkley has, when healthy, put up like Marshall Faulk type numbers. And last year we saw Barkley out there on the field not doing that. Like, he was one of those guys you kind of had to play when he was out there, but he was not giving you difference-making numbers.
But he was playing.
he was playing, but I mean, when McCaffrey's been out there, he has been putting up rock star numbers. So I think that's the
fair
difference.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, and that's my only concern with Barkley, that we don't know if he is still that special athletic specimen we saw coming out of Penn State.
Andrew, do you think it's fair to penalize Barkley for gutting it through injuries and trying to play? Do you think that if he had missed, just not been there, we'd have a sunnier view of his value?
I mean, if you asked Baker Mayfield, he probably would have said, yeah, you probably shouldn't play because if you play hurt, everyone's just going to hate you. Because that's what we hold. It's players that play hurt like Zeke. You know, whether Zeke was hurt or not last year, you know, he wasn't great from an efficiency standpoint. And if he had sat out games and played more healthy, then maybe his points per game average would have been better. And maybe people wouldn't think that Ezekiel Elliott is as washed as he most likely is at this point. So I think that, yeah, guys that gut it out usually get penalized in the end because at the end of the day, because they're playing, you are then forced to play them. Whereas McCaffrey, if the dude's not playing, like, he's out 100%. But when he's in there, it's full go. And he gets all of his fantasy points. He gets all of his touches, even if it's only for a 3-game stretch before he's back on the injured reserve.
Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Omaha Steaks. My favorite thing is being able to have an impromptu barbecue at the Pizza Pia house, and I can go right into the freezer and pull out some Omaha steaks, throw those bad boys on the grill, and start grilling on Memorial Day. That's exactly what we had. We had a little group over for a little barbecue, had those bacon-wrapped filet mignons, had a couple of the hot dogs, some steak burgers. We did all of it, and it was all there. And guess what? I've got even more still in the freezer, ready to go at a moment's notice because of Omaha Steaks. And look, with Father's Day around the corner, this makes the perfect gift for the dads out there. You can get the Dads Want Steaks package, which comes with the bacon wrap fillets, the jumbo franks, the air chilled boneless chicken breast. Plus, you got the apple caramel tartlets. They're my favorite thing. They're delicious. And you don't have to give them to the company. You can keep them for yourselves, because that's what I do. You put a little vanilla ice cream on those right out of the oven. Delicious. And when you type in Fantasy Pros into the search bar, so when you go to Omaha Steaks, you go to the search bar, put in one word, Fantasy Pros. When you do that on the search bar with the Fantasy Pros, you get 8 free Omaha Steak burgers. They are delicious. I'm telling you, it's a different texture because it's a steak burger. It's high-end, folks. This is what we're talking about. You're going to save 50%, just $99. That's right, $99 over at omahasteaks.com when you put Fantasy Pros into that search bar. And you get the 8 free Omaha Steak burgers on top of it all with the Dads Want Steak package. So Omaha Steaks isn't just steak, but it is the best steak of your life. Guaranteed. Go to omahasteaks.com today. Again, that keyword in the search bar, Fantasy Pros, and get your grill on this Father's Day. And now back to the action. All right, let's move on to another guy here. Number 11 on this list in terms of running backs and ECRs, Leonard Fournette. Tampa Bay has 111 significant vacated RB touches year over year. Ronald Jones obviously equated for most of that. Fournette has 17.8 touches per game in 2021. So the main competition is rookie Rashad White. That's really the only guy that stands in between. Andrew, we'll start with you with this one. Leonard Fournette, once again, kind of on that fringe of RB1, but it certainly feels like this is a player who showed you RB1 stuff last year. I know some reports have been negative that he came into camp a little heavy, but there's still plenty of time to get into shape. So what are your thoughts on Leonard Fournette being an RB1 again this year?
As long as he's in the Tom Brady offense, I don't see why he can't be an RB1. You know, Brady just continues to pepper his running backs with targets in the passing game. And then you get the added bonus of there's no Ronald Jones. So could we see Leonard Fournette operate more on early downs than he did last season? You know, Ronald Jones was good enough, at least when he was healthy, to at least, you know, garner some of those early down touches. But that's no longer the case. You know, you have Rashad White there, who is a rookie that I like a lot, but his skill set really duplicates that of a Leonard Fournette as a pass catcher out of the backfield. And you have Giovanni Bernard there as well as another veteran. So you have the guy that's going to get the majority of red zone looks in a high-powered offense. Talking about, you know, attaching ourselves to high-powered offenses with the guys we draft in fantasy. Fournette's a value to me. You know, I don't see why he's not viewed as a first-round pick. I mean, he was a top-five running back before he got hurt last year, and he was healthy for 15 weeks. So this wasn't a small sample size where we're going to talk about the next guy where we're kind of projecting him without another running back. You know, we saw Fournette be the bell cow for the Bucs last year, and he was a locked and loaded top 12 running back. So to see him on the fringe in an offense with so much potential is kind of, I look at it as a great value.
Yeah, it feels like a great value to me. Fitz, when you look at the value of Leonard Fournette, do you see it the same way as, hey, this guy is in a great offense, very capable quarterback, a win now team. He's shown you ever since he came to the team. I know it was very slow that first year, but by the time playoff Lenny showed up, it's been gangbusters ever since. So is it just status quo, or are you any concerned potentially about him being another year older in the game at running back?
Well, it was such a perfect storm for him last year with Tom Brady at quarterback. I mean, Brady is not looking to take hits now that he's in his mid-40s. And so he was very quick to dump off at the slightest hint of pressure, and that was to Fournette. And I don't think the plan going in was for Fournette to have the sort of workload he did the first 3 weeks. Like, we didn't really see that with Fournette. Then I think the Buccaneers were reminded of what a complete train wreck Ronald Jones is as a pass catcher and pass blocker. And really, they only trusted Fournette in that capacity after Giovanni Bernard got hurt. I mean, I think my one little bit of hesitation this year, because it sets up pretty nicely on the surface for Fournette, is that Gio is healthy, and now they've got Rashad White, who is a, you know, much more competent pass catcher and pass blocker than Ronald Jones was. So how much do they try to work those guys in and sort of, you know, spare Fournette the sort of 20-25 touch games he had last year. Like, that's the mystery here. How much do they trust those guys? But, I mean, it does set up really well for Fournette again. I mean, Brady's not getting any younger or more willing to take hits. So I think the Tampa Bay running backs are going to catch a lot of passes again.
Here's a question for you. Does taking shaving a little bit of the carry volume from Fournette actually a good thing at this age to keep him more viable longer through the season, especially with the extra game that they instituted last year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, sometimes you don't want your guy getting that huge a workload. We saw with Derrick Henry last year. I mean, eventually, even though Derrick Henry seemed indestructible, he broke down, you know, foot injury. Big deal, you know, a big usage thing. Right. And like a guy gets that kind of workload, it seems like eventually he is destined to have something physically go wrong. And maybe it is the better thing now that Fournette is going into that sort of age range where maybe he's not the best percentage play, not the ideal age you're looking for in a running back, even though the situation is great.
Yeah, that's the situation. Sometimes it weighs some of the other things. Last guy on the list here, when we're talking about high opportunity guys at running back with little competition, is James Conner. Now, right now, somehow unbelievably after last year, he is at ECR 15 in terms of the ADP over on Fantasy Pros in the half PPR. We're looking at James Conner. You know, it varies, obviously, but he's going somewhere around RB 22 right now in ADP, which, again, I know this is early ADP. That is just completely puzzling to me. Andrew, let's go back to you for this one, because I know I just, you know, bounced back to Pat for that last question. So if you're looking at Arizona, 159 vacated RB touches because there was so much of that dual backfield with Chase Edmonds, but Chase Edmonds is gone right now. Connor had 15.9 touches per game in 2021. The main competition he has right now is still Darrell Williams, who is still pretty good in terms of the running back. We've seen him ruin fantasy backfields in the past, or at least what we thought might be good investments in certain backs. Eno Benjamin there, Keontae Ingram is also available there on that roster. But in your thoughts here, was what James Conner did enough last year to prove to you his sturdiness as an RB1, or are you concerned a little bit with Williams?
You know, it's interesting. James Conner, I've thought a lot about, because I think that I first was pretty aggressive on ranking him. I thought that I looked at last year, looking at the splits with him and without Chase Edmonds in the lineup. You look at his finishes over those weeks, RB1, RB16, RB8, RB11, RB2, and RB3. Like, he had one week as his worst performance was RB16, you know, without Chase Edmonds in the lineup. So you look at that and you're like, oh my God, like, how am I going to get this guy so much later? You know, I'm getting him at ECR RB15. Like, why is he being ranked so low? And it's because of, you know, some of the competition. Now, I don't think we should just project James Conner to take on all that workload necessarily. I've kind of thought a little bit more about it, and I have tampered expectations a little bit with Conner, because when we talk about, you know, the RB dead zone as these area of the draft where you're looking at players, I kind of looked at James Conner. I was like, you know, I have him ranked higher than the RB dead zone, but it's like, he does have some profiles that kind of mimic that of a dead zone where, you know, if you project him in a really great light, he can look like he's going to just smash. You know, famously, Todd Gurley looked exactly like that when he was the only guy on the Falcons and he scored a bunch of touchdowns and it looked great. And then he just fell off a cliff at during the second half of the season. So that's like my concern about Connor. So like, I have Fournette ranked ahead of James Connor, even though before I kind of viewed them very similarly. I thought Fournette had a larger sample size of him being like the main guy for Tampa Bay last year, whereas James Conner, it was a smaller sample size with him and Chase Edmonds out of the lineup. So Darrell Williams and Eno Benjamin are both capable pass catchers. So I think that that's important to kind of keep in mind. And James Conner has been a guy that has gotten banged up. He got banged up at the end of last year. He got banged up when he was the RB1 for the Steelers, when Le'Veon Bell sat out the entire season. So I still think, though, that he has back-end RB1 appeal because the situation, again, going back to him playing in Arizona with Kyler Murray, especially without DeAndre Hopkins to start for the first 6 weeks, maybe Connor is someone you draft and you just try to look and flip him, you know, maybe as things kind of wear and tear. And that's something to remember with a lot of these running backs is running backs are a ticking time bomb. So if you draft CMC and he goes out and scores 30 points, week two, flip him for Jonathan Taylor. You know, take a more safe commodity because people are going to gravitate towards what happens in week one as this is going to happen every single week. So you have that option too when you take some of these running backs that you're maybe concerned about long term down the as the season progresses, you can flip them to these running back needy teams. So James Conner is still someone that I'm targeting in drafts. I think he's still in the third round. I think it's still a really good value.
Fitz, do you see Connor the same way as somebody to invest in early, use him, then flip him? Or do you think he is more of a long-term investment for the entire 22 season?
I mean, I think the current price is fair because do they intend for Connor to be the sort of workhorse he was last season after Chase Edmonds went down? And I think maybe the signing of Darrell Williams suggests that they do not want him to be that again. Because if you remember early last season, I mean, Connor was this one-dimensional guy who was basically a runner only, not used in the passing game, and was getting really lucky with touchdowns, which seemed to be sort of propping up his value. But then after Edmonds got hurt, all of a sudden Connor, you know, as Erickson pointed out with those weekly fantasy finishes, just turned into a monster and was catching passes and was being, like, hyper-efficient. So he showed that he can do it, but do the Cardinals want him to be that? And do they worry that a guy who has had health issues in the past might run into health issues again if he's used in that way? So I do kind of think that Darrell Williams signing is a signal that maybe the Cardinals would like to ease back on him a little bit and not take on that same sort of workload.
Well, I think the history of James Conner teaches you need an insurance policy of a quality back. And I think that's just the Cardinals doing their due diligence. Does the due diligence, I guess here's the real question, right? Does the due diligence by the Cardinals influence your opinion of James Conner enough to knock him down your rankings? Or do you think, no, James Conner had 18 touchdowns last year. James Conner was fantastic. James Conner is the dude. He is just an insurance policy. He's not there to take all those 100-plus vacated carries away.
Yeah, I mean, I was asking myself the other night, Joe, like if it's the Cardinals' first drive of the season and they wind up in 3rd and 6, who's on the field in 3rd and 6? I think I'd bet Darrell Williams. I don't know. How would you guys bet that?
I agree. I actually think you're probably correct, especially early on. I think maybe if you had Hopkins in the lineup, you don't have to do that because you could keep defenses a little honest. But Andrew, what do you think? Because I think that's a great question that Pat brings up.
No, I think that Darrell Williams is someone that when he left and first signed with the Arizona Cardinals from the Kansas City Chiefs, the initial report praised how Patrick Mahomes like really trusted him. You know, it was a trust and kind of vouched for Darrell Williams, you know, a guy that was a former undrafted free agent that really had to work his way up the ranks. Like this guy went to LSU and was just buried on the depth chart behind guys like Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis and never really got a shot to be anything. And then he ends up in Kansas City again, buried on another depth chart. Now, Darrell Williams I've had in seemingly every dynasty league for so long. So I get the appeal with him and that when he does give an opportunity, he does usually deliver. And last year he was not only used as a receiver, but he also saw some red zone usage too. So I think that they are going to trust him in Arizona to have a standalone role alongside James Conner.
It's a lot easier to bring pressure on 3rd and 6 when you don't have a DeAndre Hopkins on the field that you have to double team. Somebody else is free. And that's the thing. You're going to be able to bring more pressure in that scenario. So let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Manscaped. Look at yourself. When's the last time you checked yourself out in the mirror and you saw all the hair that's gotten out of control? It's a mess. You need to do something about it, and you need to do something fast, which means you have to run to manscaped.com and use the promo code JOEYP right now to get 20% off and free shipping because they have got the products to take care of yourself a little bit. They've got the lawnmower 4.0. Start trimming that chest hair, that body hair, that other hair. All the hair can get trimmed with the lawnmower 4.0. You go out there and you mow your lawn outside. Maybe it's time to mow the lawn inside for a change. They've got that skin-safe technology. It's got the LED light. It's got all that. So it's got the goods that aren't going to hurt your goods. Plus they've got the crop preserver, the crop reviver. They've also got all the tools, including the plow 2.0. Yeah. Have you heard about the plow? It's the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face. On your face. Where'd you think I was going with that? On your face. And if you're using the lawnmower 4.0, other places, you could use that on your face too, but really it's the plow 2.0. For your face. Okay, I'm telling you right now, Manscaped is the place to go. And Manscaped cares a lot about you as a man, how you look like, but also how you feel and also your health. And starting in the spring, they've also started to bring awareness to testicular cancer. And that is something that's very important too. So they are involved in that. They are involved in men's health. Be involved with Manscaped. They are trying to save your balls, not only from embarrassment of being too hairy, but they're also trying to save your balls in real life too. So get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code JOEYP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free free shipping. Again, that code JOEP at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. And now back to the action. Let's move to another group of running backs. Now, the next guys we're going to talk about have good opportunity, but also have some competition. So I want to pick the guys' brains, try to figure out which of the situations we want to go with. We want to go with the competition, or do we want to go with the good opportunity? And again, this is all relative to the investment we have to make in the player. We can start with Darrell Henderson, who certainly had his opportunities last year. Right now, he is the ECR RB43 over on Fantasy Pros. And the Rams had 229 significant vacated RB touches last year. That's a lot. Mostly because obviously the Cam Akers injury happened. Now, Henderson had 14.8 touches per game in 2021. Mostly some good efforts from him, some solid runs, that's for sure. Sony Michel did enter in from time to time. The main competition, though, is Cam Akers. So, Andrew, are we going to approach Darrell Henderson as one of these guys that at RB43 has maybe more value than we realize? Or is it just Cam Akers season and we need to say last year was just an anomaly?
I mean, it's... The way that the Rams have used their running backs in the Sean McVay era is they use one running back. Like, I don't see a scenario where Darrell Henderson, outside of Cam Akers' injury, is really fantasy relevant at all. And look, we can talk about every, you know, running back having more value if there is an injury ahead of them, because that's how it works. And look, Darrell Henderson, like you mentioned, he had that shot last year and he was okay. Like, he was not like, oh, he blew it away. Like, he totally cemented himself. Because if he had cemented himself, we wouldn't be caring about Cam Akers. You know, I wouldn't be excited about Cam Akers being the RB1 in the Rams offense. And he's already hurt. Like Darrell Henderson, for a guy that doesn't ever have a featured role, he gets hurt quite a lot. Like, at least with some of these other running backs, you know, they are the clear RB1 and they get hurt after they touch the ball 300 times. Like, Darrell Henderson has not even hit 200 in one season without getting banged up. So for him, it's like, yeah, if Akers goes down, you can put him in the offense. He'll do just enough to kind of get you by for a week or two. But he was someone I'd probably rather just flip. Like, the minute that, you know, an Akers injury happens, Darrell Henderson is pegged up as that RB1, enters into the top 12 conversation, I'm going to trade him, because we've seen him in the bell cow role and he's just kind of been underwhelming for the most part. You know, he's been okay. And I think that people will attach and think that he'll be more than he actually is.
You made an interesting comment there, which was, you know, he's a one running back kind of guy. Now, it's easy when that running back is Todd Gurley at his peak. That's very easy to just give all the carries to him. But once Gurley was gone, we saw Malcolm Brown 2 years ago with Cam Akers. We did see some other running backs kind of working their way. Darrell Henderson certainly got some opportunities there as well. So is Sean McVay fits a one running back kind of guy? Like, is he really that, or is he really want to see other people and kind of date around when it comes to the running back position? And do you think Cam Akers is that guy, or do you think Darrell Henderson might be able to once again potentially be more relevant than people realize at that current ECR and ADP?
Well, if I'm going to pinch hit for Derek Brown, I feel compelled to go to bat for Cam Akers, because, you know, D-Bro is one of the biggest Cam Akers stands I know. And actually, Akers is on my list of 13 players I'm targeting. That's in our redraft kit right now.
Nice plug.
That's a premium feature, so people will want to shell out for that one. But I think I lay out a pretty good case for Akers. And the main part of that case, I think, is that last year, Joe, in the most important games of the season, with you know, Akers coming not very far removed from this major injury, he was a medical marvel to come back from an Achilles in what, like 6 months, and they just totally turned over the keys to the backfield to Cam Akers for their most important games of the season, the elimination games, the playoff games, and basically kicked Sony Michel to the curb, even though he had been very good for them when called upon. And, you know, Darrell Henderson was banged up at the time, came back in time for the Super Bowl, so he was not an option. But they totally trusted Akers, and even though he wasn't very effective in the playoffs, I think what matters more is that they showed that trust to give him, you know, the big snap shares, the big touch counts in those critical games. So I think it is going to be mostly Cam Akers. I do think Henderson is strictly going to be a handcuff, and since I don't believe in drafting handcuffs, I'm really not interested in him. So I'm an Akers guy too.
And Derrickson approved.
Yeah.
Derrickson approved.
I agree about the Sean McVay running back monogamy too. I kind of think that that's how he likes to operate.
You can tell that Pat's smarter than all of us because that's why Pat's stuff is behind the paywall, whereas my stuff's all free. You know, you can see all my stuff everywhere. All right, let's get to one more name, and this is a name for the ages too. It's Cordero Patterson. Last year, man, was certainly looking like the waiver wire climb of 2021. He probably was, no matter what. Now he is RB36. His role still to be determined a certain amount. Now, Atlanta has 211 significant vacated RB touches. Mike Davis was not the guy. There was nobody there that was the guy. Patterson had 12.8 touches per game in 2021. He did break down the second half. We all saw that. The main competition, though, is Damian Williams, who's been a journeyman, and Tyler Algier, who they just drafted. So, Erickson, we're looking at Cordero Patterson. This is a really tough one because came out of nowhere, older player, had a breakout, but there's a lot of carries still to be spoken for in Atlanta. A team that I think desperately needs to try to run the football more because that offensive line isn't very good. And you don't want Marcus Mariota just sitting back there a lot because he's going to get hammered. So how do you approach Cordero Patterson's value this year?
He's got to be one of the toughest players to try to rank because he has a very wide range of outcomes, starting with, you know, what's his role in the offense? You know, they've talked about using him more as a receiver. You're talking about how Arthur Smith should establish the run. Is Cordero Patterson the guy that you need to establish this north and south running style that you did with Derrick Henry in Tennessee? Like, probably not. So they're going to get touches from these other backs. I don't think we're going to see Cordero Patterson, you know, I don't even know if we see him get 200 total touches next year, let alone, you know, all of the vacated targets that are in this offense. And I think it makes sense that the majority of his touches would come in target form, not necessarily as a rusher. And I don't necessarily think that we're going to see him see as many targets potentially as last year, at least on a per game basis. I mean, Matt Ryan was the quarterback last year. Matt Ryan is in the Phillip Rivers arc of his career where, ooh, running back? Oh, check down. Like, these older quarterbacks love to check the ball down to the running backs. They don't want to get hit. Whereas Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder, the two quarterbacks for the Falcons, they need to use their mobility because, like you alluded to and mentioned, the offensive line in Atlanta is horrible. So they need their quarterbacks to move around to create opportunities for their playmakers down the field, whether it be Kyle Pitts and Drake London. So I think that he'll have a role as a receiver, but I think that Algier or one of these other guys will probably work in on early downs. I think Algier's profile is that more of a physical north-south runner. I don't know how great that's going to be when they open the season against the Saints, Rams, and Seahawks. Three really good run defenses, so it's going to be tough sledding for a rookie that I really liked, and he's probably going to suck the first month of the year. But I do think that Damian Williams is still someone that could be involved from a receiving standpoint out of the backfield. You know, when I was doing my deep sleepers piece, which is over on fantasypros.com, part of the redraft kit, I looked at all 32 teams and talked about sleepers. And I just mentioned Damian Williams because there's a coaching connection with him in Atlanta. So the Falcons running back coach, Michael Petrie, was from the Chicago Bears. So he came over alongside Damian Williams. Now you can just kind of brush that off and be like, oh, Andrew, what does that matter? Well, previously, Dave Ragone, the Chicago Bears passing game coordinator, came over with Cordero Patterson last year to the Atlanta Falcons. And clearly he had some say in, hey, let's get Cordero Patterson more involved. So just kind of something that I looked when I was trying to take a deep dive at some of these teams. So I still think that where he's going, I think he's worth taking a shot on, especially if he has running back and wide receiver eligibility. Like, if you can start another receiver at your running back slot, I think that that's worth the cost where you have to draft him.
Now, if you're watching us on the YouTube channel, you're watching the show, and I know that you are, many of you on Fantasy Pros, you'll see that Andrew always has a very tight shot, because if you pan back to the rest of the office, you will see all of those red yarns and the threads with the pictures on the walls, tying all the coordinators and coaches of who played with this guy and had lunch with this guy one time. It's an amazing thing. I've seen it. It's slightly terrifying, but it's to your advantage. And Andrew's 100% right. I mean, he makes a great point. When you come in there and you know the personnel, there's always a favoritism for the personnel you know, because you're comfortable with them. They understand you speak the same language. This is football. Okay. And that doesn't mean there's not room for a guy like Tyler Algier to show up. So I guess the question for me to you, Fitz, is Algier at 60 a better investment than Cordero Patterson at 36?
To me, he probably is, just because he's more of a traditional running back. But that's the thing, Joe. Like, my instincts are to fade Patterson because of his age, because he's this sort of weird, gadgety, non-traditional running back, because the Atlanta offense is probably going to be pretty terrible, and there's a bad offensive line there in a transitional state at quarterback. But then you look at the competition, and you've got, you know, Damian Williams, an older guy who's mostly been a backup in his career, and a day three rookie. But I do think the day three rookie at cost is probably a little bit better bet than Patterson is.
Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Pristine Auction. My friends, there is no better place to go than Pristine Auction when you're looking for the coolest sports memorabilia that you're going to find anywhere. Everything there is authentic and backed by that certification of authenticity. And not everything there is super crazy expensive. I know some of you are on a budget, but that doesn't mean you can't have some fun and bid on some cool stuff. And when you use that promo code FANTASYPROS, you can start today and get $5 credits on us. That's right. $5, just start bidding with that promo code FANTASYPROS when you sign up at pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. It's quick and free to register. They've got amazing stuff on there. We're talking helmets, jerseys. We're even talking about baseball stuff, basketball stuff, college football, you name it. They've got it over there, and it's not just sports memorabilia, too. They've got cool wrestling things. They've got art. They've got so many things that'll make your head spin, but you can't get involved, and you can't get the cool stuff in your house unless you start bidding today. And when you do, make sure you use that promo code FANTASYPROS at Pristine Auction. That's pristineauction.com. And now, back to the action. All right, last guy here in the group of running backs where we're talking about running backs have good opportunity, but there's also solid competition in the backfield itself. So we could talk about Rex Burkhead. We could talk about Marlon Mack, Damian Pierce, however you want to talk about them. But just for an idea, Houston has 251 significant vacated RB touches year over year. That's an enormous number, the biggest number we've talked about. Burkhead had 9.2 touches per game last year. I don't think any of us would see Burkhead as a featured back. I just don't think any of us see him at this point in his career as that guy, or maybe even ever. A nice running back, a guy that could certainly show up there. It was a good football player more than anything, but this is fantasy football. So from a fantasy football perspective, when we're looking at this, Fitz, we see the rookie Damian Pierce, we see Marlon Mack, who is a guy that's put up a couple thousand yard rushing seasons for the Colts. So there's certainly going to be the impetus to run the football. There's certainly the vacated significant touches. The question is, who's the guy to target and what's the return on that investment? Bad offense, but still volume potentially to be had. So how do you approach this backfield here, Fitz?
By avoiding it like the plague, Joe. I mean, like, I am drawn.
You set me up for that one. I was really trying to get like one of these names, and you just pulled the rug right out from under me. Well done, sir. Well done.
You know, if I was going to go for anyone, it would be Damian Pierce, but I just don't want, I like ambiguous backfields on good offenses. I don't like ambiguous backfields on bad offenses in situations where they're probably not going to be a lot of run friendly game scripts. So I'm kind of avoiding this. And I hate that it's a multi-way backfield too, Joe. Like, it's not just a two man. If it's a two man, I might place my bet somewhere, you know, in the double digit rounds, but with three or more guys mixed in here, like, I'm just staying away.
Okay. All right. For those people, because as we all know, Fitz is one of the hosts of the Dynasty Football podcast here, knows a lot about the college game. So for those of the people who don't listen to that show particularly or don't play Dynasty, give me a little scouting report on Damian Pierce just so people know what to expect from him either in this year or going forward, what his potential might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's an exciting prospect, and the big question on him is, like, why did Dan Mullen not use him more? I mean, this was a guy who I think ran for, like, 13 touchdowns, maybe 15 touchdowns in his final year at Florida on 100 carries. Like, how does he only get that sort of workload when he was as impressive as he was? I mean, a lot of scouts are excited about him. I think he's got some pass-catching chops. You know, not great college receiving stats, but I think he's proven himself capable. So he's an interesting dude for sure. And I think he could potentially be one of these guys like maybe Josh Jacobs, who didn't have a huge role in college, but came into the NFL and showed he actually could be a lead back.
Okay, very good. All right, the Texans backfield, lots of opportunity. Not a good offense. Andrew Erickson, you're raising your hand. I know you can't wait to talk about this. So look, I mean, in deeper leagues, we do have to address. If you play in a 14-team league, look, these are some of the backfields you're going to have to get dirty with and get ugly with. So if you got to get ugly here, who are you getting ugly with? And obviously, this is, you know, not fit, so you can bring the handcuffs.
So it's not Marlon Mack. I'm definitely not touching Marlon Mack with a 10-foot pole. The guy hasn't basically done nothing for two seasons. And for me, it's Rex Burkhead. And I think that there's a case to be made for Rex Burkhead. When you look at the running backs that are able to overcome bad situations, what do they all have in common? Besides the ones that see a lot of volume, it's ones that can catch passes out of the backfield. Ones that are used in the receiving game. And throughout Rex Burkhead's entire career as a backup, whether he was in Cincinnati, whether he was in New England, he's always had these like weird spiked weeks when he's been able to be used as a receiver out of the backfield.
Right.
You know, and we saw that at the end of last year. And the Texans recognized that and signed him to a contract extension. He's the highest paid running back on the Houston Texans. It's not Mack. It's not Damian Pierce, who was drafted in the fourth round. It's Rex Burkhead. And I know that you mentioned earlier when talking about Burkhead that he's never been featured. He was never more featured than he was last year when he doubled his career high in rushing attempts, rushing yards, and games started in his first year in Houston. And I don't think that that's a coincidence based on the fact that he came over from New England with Nick Caserio. So there's a connection between the general manager and this on-field player that has trust from the management and is someone that they can trust in passing situations, which if the Texans are not a good defense, then they're going to be trailing in games. And I think that means we're going to see Rex Burkhead on the field. Like, you don't want the early down grinders on these bad teams. Like, I 100% agree with that because there's just no opportunity for them to really rack up fantasy points. But I'm not going to be surprised if week one comes around, the Texans are trailing and Rex Burkhead catches like 6 or 7 targets and has 5 receptions for 50 yards with another 50 rushing yards. Like, that would not shock me at all. And then we're talking about week one waiver wire. Oh, what do you know? Rex Burkhead is the number one waiver wire ad. Like, that would not shock me at all. So if you're drafting in best ball leagues, I think that Rex Burkhead is honestly worth a last round pick.
I will take the Damian Pierce route for fun. Here you go. Here's my bold prediction. You ready for this, boys? Rex Burkhead might be useful out of the gate. First few weeks of the season, we'll get the inevitable Rex Burkhead injury. Damian Pierce will be the most added player that week at the waiver wire, and that will be the rest of that story. That's where I'm going. We'll see how that ends up, and time will tell. If you've got some comments about some of these RBs that you think might be able to be RB1s, drop them in the chat here. If you're watching in the YouTube, we always love your comments here, all of them, especially the ones about Derek Brown sounding like Mr. Garrison from South Park. That's my favorite one. Love that. That might be comment of the year, but more on that later. Let's get to Andrew Erickson's piece that's out there right now, which is how to identify sleeper and late round running backs to target. So, Andrew, you did a deep dive on this. It was fantastic. Why don't you walk everybody through who hasn't read the piece yet, and they can read it over at fantasypros.com, about some of the stats and some of the pieces here that are really important in terms of how we target some of these running backs and what sort of running back ranges we're targeting for which reasons.
Yeah, so some of the facts that we have listed here. So since 2017, 15 running backs drafted outside the top 24 in PPR leagues finished inside the top 15. Since 2017, RBs taken with an RB 25 to 38 ADP range finished on average as the RB 17, basically a mid-range RB 2. Over the same time frame, any running back that was drafted in that range, 25 to 38, who outperformed their ADP, finished as a top 27 option, except for Michael Carter last year. 70% of these outperforming running backs finished inside the top 20. So those three statistics are really telling me that when you're looking for these breakout running backs, they're really coming in the 24 to 40 range. Like, basically, when you get outside the top 40 in ADP is where you start to see it kind of flattens out. Like, you're not seeing an advantage. Like, RB 40 is basically the same thing as RB 65. So, you know, the market is on, you know, these breakout running backs, like, for the most part. Like, they're ranked for the most part in that RB 3 range because we are able to identify. I mean, the market has gotten a lot sharper over the years as more data has been, and a lot of great analysts have just done a lot of great work kind of showing the different types of trends. And the market has been precise about kind of labeling these RB3s as potential breakouts. And I know that we're going to talk about some of those guys here today as well, but it's in the players, the archetype of these players are not of backups. Like, they're not like the injury away guys. And it's easy to make the case for, oh, well, he's one injury away. He's one injury away. But the research that I did basically shows that happens so much less than we think it does. like it's always, it seems like it happens all the time because it's always like the hard hitting news and analysis whenever a running back goes down, and then everyone's eyes are on that backup running back. Meanwhile, this guy that has drafted outside the top 24 has been like putting up steady production all year long that not a lot of people have just been really noticing. So the, you know, the glamour picks are always the guys that are the Tony Pollards of the world, where, you know, we all know the upside with Tony Pollard, but you know, how many times has it actually come to fruition? Like once. Like, we've had 1 week where Tony Pollard's really been the guy that, oh, Zeke is out, we can plug Tony Pollard in, we got an RB1 performance, and then a couple times with Alexander Mattison. But for the most part, it doesn't come from injuries. It really comes from running backs that are just part of ambiguous backfields, you know, playing up to maybe where their draft status doesn't necessarily dictate where they are. And then ones, especially in the PPR format, ones that catch passes. Like ones that are able to see a role in the receiving game, like Nyheim Hines, for example, like this year, like he's such a strong bet to beat his ADP. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a player that is super reliable week to week. I don't think he's going to be reliable. It's going to be tough to peg Nyheim Hines the weeks he's going to go off. But with Matt Ryan as his new quarterback, someone that targeted the running back position a lot last year, I mean, you look back 2 years ago and Nyheim Hines was a top 24 running back in PPR. So it's not going to be shocking to me to see those guys like a Nyheim Hines, you know, beat his ADP dramatically attached to a new quarterback like Matt Ryan. So those are kind of my main takeaways, basically, just that don't overvalue the injury away guys, the quote unquote handcuffs. And if you draft one, draft him with your last pick. Like do not overinvest in these types of players unless you think they have standalone value, where there are some guys that would obviously gain value if an injury happened, but they can still kind of be used like an AJ Dillon, where, you know, he's not just like viewed as like a backup to Aaron Jones. Like, he has his own role in this offense, but obviously you'd see it expanded with an injury to Aaron Jones. And attack guys with the pass catching background and attack players in ambiguous backfields. And really, it's that once you get outside the top 40, I would honestly just kind of put off running backs. We don't see a lot of breakout running backs come from that range. And if anything, you just wait till, you know, the 60s for running back ADP. It's like guys that
that's where Tyler Algier is right now.
Yeah.
He's at 60. Pierce is around there too. So that's makes a lot of sense to me. And if you want to see more about this piece, once again, it's over on Fantasy Pros. It's how to identify sleeper and late round running backs to target. Now, speaking of that, let's talk about some of those guys. Let's talk about guys who are outside the top 24 that we think can crack RB2 and might have upside for more. Pat, give me the three names in your opinion that come to mind when I say guys outside the top 24 in ADP right now in terms of RB that you think really could finish as RB2 or even make that approach to RB1 at some point.
Yeah, Erickson just mentioned one of them, AJ Dillon. I think he's in a great setup with the Packers, prime to run at a higher percentage with no more Devontae Adams and probably target their running backs at a much higher percentage. It's a good offense overall. It's also a very good defense in Green Bay now, so they're probably going to have a lot of run-friendly game scripts with their manageable NFC North schedule. So he's primed to be in a good spot. And as Erickson mentioned, if anything happened to Aaron Jones, all of a sudden you've got a bonanza. Miles Sanders, who everyone seems to hate, I learned after I posted a trade I made where I actually dealt away Jonathan Taylor, which incurred the wrath of a lot of my followers. You know, Miles Sanders was like the third or fourth piece in that, and everyone's response was, Miles Sanders stinks. What were you thinking? But he had bad luck.
Like that on Twitter. I'm sorry. Sometimes I just lash out.
I mean, there are a lot of
things. I love the AJ Dillon pick. I love that one.
Hey, no touchdowns for Sanders last year, but contract year, kind of an uncertain backfield, but it's a good offense and a great offensive line in Philadelphia. And they work a lot of RPOs into their offense, and that's really good for running backs. And we saw Sanders be really efficient. I mean, he averaged 5.5 yards a carry, just couldn't find the end zone last year. So I just think the setup is terrific for him to bounce back. And Ramondre Stevenson, who, you know, he was kind of doghoused early last year after he fumbled away the ball in his first game. I think he was inactive weeks 2, 3, 4, and 7. Then over his last 11 regular season games, he had 132 carries. And, you know, in Football Outsiders' rushing success rate, Stevenson finished third in the league behind only AJ Dillon and cough, cough, Ronald Jones, cough, cough. and Damian Harris finished 19th in that category. So, he's a really interesting guy in a backfield that maybe is more ambiguous than people think. So another thing to like about all three of these guys, A.J. Dillon, Miles Sanders, and Ramondre Stevenson, is that they all play for teams that are ranked in the top 10 in Football Outsiders adjusted line yards. That's their run blocking metric. So these are good offensive lines these dudes are running behind, and pretty good offenses overall.
I absolutely love the Ramondre Stevenson one. I agree with you 100%. That's one of the more appealing backs that we can make investments in that are cheap, because once again, you know, the Patriots are going to run the football. And if anything does happen to Damian Harris, he certainly would stand to benefit from that. AJ Dillon, I mean, the last couple of weeks on this show has been my love letter to AJ Dillon. Love that. Miles Sanders one I'm trying to get behind. You've made a lot of convincing arguments. I don't know if it's going to move the needle for me. But you did bring some good numbers. You did back it up. And again, I'm sorry for my outburst on Twitter. I have a problem sometimes.
Everyone hates him, Joe. Everyone hates him.
Well, I mean, zero touchdowns hurts, but I think it also hurts is the injury issues back and forth. You know, when you're losing carries to Scott, to Howard last year, and then you have a running quarterback. I think that's always the thing to scares people away sometimes, because the quarterback's going to run well. You know, sometimes that takes away some of the opportunities for the carries. But look, if he continues to get suppressed in value, the cheaper he is, the more appealing he becomes. And I'm like the $1 million man. Everybody has a price on my team. So if you come at the right price, then I'm going to listen.
Andrew Erickson. DiBiase reference.
That's right, baby. I want you to dribble this basketball, and then I'm going to knock it away from you. Before, that's one of the best bits of all time. I was going to give that kid $100 if he could dribble it 100 times or whatever it was, and he knocked it away, or 10 times, whatever it was. All right, let's get to Andrew's names here. So, Andrew, give me three guys outside the top 24 that can crack maybe RB1 or RB2 that you think everybody should be paying attention to.
Yeah, so my first guy is Devin Singletary. He finished last year as the RB3 in terms of PPR scoring, and it's because they unleashed him down the stretch. They were like, you know what? We're done with the Zach Moss experiment. We're done with the Matt Breida experiment. We're just going to use one running back, and it kind of makes me hopeful for Saquon Barkley now in this Brian Daboll offense that they featured one running back, and I thought it was interesting. Singletary, you know, going back to week one of the season, he was the featured back, but he had two fumbles. And then in week two, he fumbled again. And then it was after he kept dropping putting the ball on the ground that his snaps just totally fell off. He was just a non-factor, like basically the entire Bills running backs, because the coaches were like, you know what, we're fed up with the running backs just fumbling the ball all the time. Let's just throw it on every single down, which we obviously love to see as people that play fantasy. But then after week 11, when his snaps started to increase, no fumbles. Like his security had improved. He wasn't putting the ball on the ground. And I mean, when you look at Singletary from an efficiency standpoint, like he's not like the sexiest running back in terms of this explosiveness, but I mean, fourth ranked running back in rushes of 15 plus yards, seventh ranked in terms of forced missed tackles. Like he really hasn't been as bad as a lot of people will look and see like, oh, Devin Singletary, he just sucks. It's like, not really. He's not that bad of running back. I don't think that he's an elite talent, but like we've mentioned before, you know, he's entering his contract year. You know, the Bills obviously drafted James Cook, but I was reading a report by The Athletic's Joe Bascala. Basically, he pointed out that it would be illogical to think that Cook is going to step into a gargantuan role as a rookie while Singletary remains on the roster. Cook's skill set can help them use the rookie more creatively than their other backs, but, and I will now shout out our own guy, Pat, here, who had a brilliant tweet about James Cook, and just basically, I don't know how fruitful the receiving role in this backfield is going to be, and if Singletary is at least operating on early downs and potentially working in the red zone like he was towards the end of last season, I think I'm starting to lean more towards Singletary, but I'll let Pat kind of share his findings.
Yeah, so in Josh Allen's four seasons in Buffalo, he has 31 touchdown runs. All Bills running backs combined have 28 touchdown runs. In those 4 years, Bills running backs have ranked 19th, 26th, 29th, and 29th in percentage of team targets for running backs. No Bills running back has exceeded 269 receiving yards, and no Bills running back has exceeded 870 rushing yards in a single season. So I think people really love the fit for James Cook when Buffalo drafted him and were eager to get him in dynasty rookie drafts. But like, maybe Josh Allen just isn't really that good for his running backs. I know a lot of people say he just hasn't had good ones, but you know, are we so sure?
It's
that
a chicken
James...
and the egg argument, but I kind of tend to be where you are on it.
And I'm with Erickson. Like, I think Singletary is still the guy to have in this backfield.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Andrew, give us another two guys here on your list.
Yeah, I think that these are definitely my like favorite two. I just so see them easily beating their ADP. So Kareem Hunt. I think the first thing with him is Kareem Hunt is a trade candidate. Like, I don't necessarily envision him being on the Browns for this entire season. They have Nick Chubb. They have D'Ernest Johnson, who signed his deal. They drafted Demetric Felton last year, who they've been vocal about making the full-time switch to running back. And then they drafted Jerome Ford. You know, all of these moves don't indicate to me that Kareem Hunt is, like, going to be there for the entire season, especially with running backs getting hurt so often. Kareem Hunt is a former rushing champion. Like, he is a player that last year was a top 10 running back in PPR for the first six weeks of the season. And last year, Kareem Hunt was a guy you had to draft in like round five. And all of a sudden, because he got hurt and he played only eight games, even though he was a top 10 running back, now he's available like outside the top 100 picks. So that's why I think Kareem Hunt is just a screaming value, because like we've mentioned before, he's done it already. He's been an RB1. It just takes him to, like, what team is Kareem Hunt going to that he's not immediately the RB1 on? Like, there's not a lot of teams where you're like, oh, he's going to be the backup. And unfortunately, that's the team that he's on currently, where he's going to be the backup to Nick Chubb. But, you know, if he went to Houston, oh, goodbye, Rex Burkhead. Sorry. Like, I thought you could have done something, but it's going to be the Kareem Hunt show in the Houston Texans. So, sixth in yards after contact per attempt, sixth in yards per route run, 26% target rate per route run last year for Kareem Hunt. He's only 27 years old, which is the same age as Leonard Fournette. And he has way less wear and tear on his tires. So I think Kareem Hunt is someone that could just easily beat his ADP outside the top 24. And then my last guy, someone I've been kind of pounding the table for, is Melvin Gordon. 29-year-old running back last year, just super underrated. Eighth in PFF rushing grade and eighth in forced missed tackles. He had 231 touches last year. And people are like, nah, it's just going to be Javonte Williams getting all the touches, even though Nathaniel Hackett, we literally saw him last year deploy a two-back system between Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Everything that they've said out about Denver is that they're going to operate a two-back system. And Melvin Gordon basically said to reporters, he was like, I'm not laying down. Like, I want to be the RB1 in this offense. And Melvin Gordon is out to prove that he still has gas in the tank, which he showed last year. There was nothing about his efficiency last year that shows that this guy is wearing down. And if I had to pick anybody to be this version of Fournette or James Conner, it would be Melvin Gordon. Like, if Javonte Williams goes down, where are we ranking Melvin Gordon? He's going to be a top 12 running back playing in a high-powered offense. He led the Broncos in red zone touches last year alongside Javonte Williams, 46 red zone touches. So for me, my money's on Melvin Gordon. So he refuses to lay down, I will refuse to not draft him.
Well, Hunt and Gordon are two of my favorite RBs that I'm getting everywhere in mock drafts and real drafts is my flex RB kind of guy, because I just love the value. Even though I am a Javonte Williams guy, you can't ignore the value you're going to get in certain drafts with Gordon. And I've got a lot of Singletary shares, and I imagine I'm going to have a whole lot more. Running back on a good team, yes, please. Speaking of backfields, last question here. You know, we talked about ambiguous bad backfields, or should I say ambiguous backfields on bad offenses. Let's talk about an ambiguous backfield on a good offense. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, in case you missed the Derek Gore special a few weeks ago at Fantasy Pros, Andrew Erickson already talked about him, Jerick McKinnon in the fold, Ronald Jones, who's come up more than once here on the show, and of course, the enigmatic Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So, Fitz, you said before, I don't want to invest in this backfield because it's ambiguous and bad. Well, this is a good offense, but certainly ambiguous. So are you making any investments in the Chiefs backfield?
Yeah, I mean, in best ball, I might make a late round investment in McKinnon. Like, people, so okay. I don't love CEH at cost. I'm not totally ruling it out. I don't like Jones just because I think everyone gets disgusted with how bad he is in the passing game and want to diminish his role that way. So I'm not seeing like the path for a big bounce back for him, even though he's in a more high powered offense. People want to kind of like poo-poo the McKinnon signing, but like, this is the one guy in this backfield who's been a successful passing down back on multiple teams. Wouldn't be surprised if he wound up playing that role for the Chiefs.
Andrew, are you leaving Derek Gore for Jerick McKinnon now he's come back into town?
Not necessarily. I do think that McKinnon's addition to the Chiefs is horrible for Edwards-Helaire, because Edwards-Helaire looked like the clear-cut favorite to be the receiving back, which is just has like, that's what we were hoping happened like the last 2 years. He would be the receiving back. and now McKinnon is back in there. And they trust McKinnon. Like, I don't think we will need to overlook the fact that this team in the playoffs with Super Bowl aspirations turned to Jerick McKinnon. Edward Solaire, I know, came back from an injury, but was practicing. Like, he was good enough to practice in full. Like, why wasn't he featured in the game plan? Because maybe he wasn't as good as Jerick McKinnon was last year. Like, I don't know what else we need to see from Edward Solaire and what the coaching staff continues to do. We're continuing to add pieces to this backfield, continuing to play undrafted free agents like Darrell Williams over Edward Solaire, and then get better production. Like, all of these guys that we can talk about being, you know, these cast-offs and journeymen, well, every time they end up playing for the Chiefs, they keep smashing. Like, they keep on producing, and Edward Solaire continues to not do that. So it would be one thing if I could definitively say that Edward Solaire is, like, a good fantasy football running back, but I cannot come on this podcast and say that with a straight face because I don't know if I believe it, and I haven't seen it
yet. And you can't
yet.
Say it at the ADP. That's the problem. No. The problem is what Fitz said, and that's the most important thing I think we should drive home. It's the investment you have to make to find out if he is. That just doesn't work for me either. So this was a great discussion. Again, if you want to read more about all these discussions, you can go to fantasypros.com and check out some of these articles we talked about here on the show today. I want to thank the guys for all their insights, incredible stuff here. And again, make sure you don't forget about the cheat sheets as well that we have available over at fantasypros.com too. So if you go over to fantasypros.com/draftwizard, you can create your own cheat sheets with your favorite experts. And of course, if you are a Fantasy Pros subscriber and member here, you're part of the family, you can sync all those cheat sheets up for your draft simulations and for your draft assistant tools. So all of your drafts, you can have us in the room with you. And every time we make a change to a ranking, you'll have the most up-to-date rankings as well. So I want to thank the sponsors of today's show, including Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com, get 20% off and free shipping with that promo code JOEYP. Again, that's JOEYP at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Also, don't forget about Omaha Steaks, the Dads Want Steaks package. That's what you need. Go to omahasteaks.com, go to the search bar, put in Fantasy Pros, and let it take you to the glorious meat that you've been waiting for. That's right, it's grilling season, and Omaha Steaks has got you prepared. Don't forget to put Fantasy Pros in that search bar at omahasteaks.com. And of course, Pristine Auction. Head over to pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. The coolest place to get all the neatest swag when it comes to fantasy sports memorabilia, and use that promo code Fantasy Pros to get a $5 credit on us. That'll do it for us, but the story of the game goes on. For Pat Fitzmaurice and Andrew Erickson, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.